Transform Together, das Podcast-Meetup. Von und mit Johannes Schartau und Holistikon.
Alright, welcome. My name is Johannes Schartau and today I will be talking to Patrick Hovestad. Let me formally introduce Patrick. He is the founder of Fractal Consulting, the chair of Systems and Complexity in Organizations and author of several books, including Patterns of Strategy, The Grammar of Systems, and The Fractal Organization, which you are all required to read, by the way. Patrick is also one of the few people who are deep system thinkers, but still use normal language that can be understood by fellow human beings. It's very nice to have you, Patrick.
Nice to be here, Johannes. Thanks for inviting me.
I was thinking that I'll just quickly tell people how we met. And that was that I read your book, Patterns of Strategy, and then I thought this is incredible for multiple reasons. And one was that, of course, the entire content about strategy is fascinating, but then also you explained Agile in such a profound, succinct way and without any terminology from the Agile bubble at that time. And I was just kind of really fascinated by that. And I reached out and said, I kind of want to learn from you. And that's how we got started. And for this episode, we had a short call and we're kind of thinking about what could be some potential topics, and then we had to stop because it got interesting so quickly that I thought, okay, we have to kind of do this in front of people. So I was thinking that we'll just start this conversation. I'll ask you a couple of questions and then we'll see where it goes. Afterwards, by the way, there's some interaction planned and it's going to be pretty cool, I think. Okay, Patrick, you said you're still all about strategy, organization, transformation. Can you explain why these three and why, how do they connect?
I think, for me, there's a natural kind of flow. So there's an obvious flow from strategy to organization. So, you come up with a strategy and you might need to change the organization. So that gets into the organizational space. And then that might involve transformation of the organization. So you have to do that. So that's the kind of obvious flow, but there's a flow the other way, which is strategies don't come out of nowhere. They are developed by organizations, and you have to be able to, if you don't design organizations to be intelligent, to be smart, to be able to come up with good strategy, they come up with stupid strategies. So there's a flow that goes the other way from organization to strategy as well. And both of them involve doing something different, which is where the transformation comes in. So for me, the three go together quite naturally. And we actually got into strategy because we were doing lots of work, organizational work and transformation work for clients. And they asked for help with strategy. And we looked at all the strategy approaches that we could see. And we knew that none of them really worked. So we had to come up with something different. So we had to go back to first principles and look at it systemically and say, well, why does conventional strategy fail nearly always? And when you looked at it from a systems lens, you go, oh, well, that's why. And we came up with a different approach. But it was a demand pull from clients to bring strategy into the mix from just organization and transformation, which is where we started, Does that sort of answer the question, Johannes?
Absolutely.
How they go together?
Yes, absolutely.
You can't do one without pulling in one of the others at some point,
Yeah. And I actually fully agree. And I think my background is quite similar, that there was a pull. I think I'm working on quite similar topics. I would say that Patterns of Strategy is absolutely required reading for all the people listening. But could you just kind of...
Well, I would, but I'm biased, so...
No, that's why I'm doing it for you.
Good man.
could you just elaborate a bit when you said there were reasons why strategy... traditional ways of strategy making didn't work, and from a systemic lens this was kind of obvious. Could you just explain what that means?
There are lots of things you can look at with traditional strategy and go, oh well, that's a problem with it. So yeah, but the big one for me is that if you're looking at it systemically, you're looking at anything systemically, what you tend to focus on is relationships. So you look at things, how they relate, rather than the actual things themselves. Now, conventional strategy doesn't do that. So you are never, ever doing strategy in a space where there's just you, because then it's not strategy, And none of the conventional approaches to strategy kind of look at this in a relational way. So they don't go, right, this is the nature of the relationships between us and the other actors in our environment, and this is the dynamic of those relationships, and this is why we end up doing the things that we end up doing, which is how you look at it systemically. So they're all kind of just about us. You know, it's about conventional strategy is all about what we want to do, and assuming that the rest of the world is just going to get out the way and let us do it. Well, life's just not like that, you know. The rest of the strategic world is full of other actors doing their own thing, and their strategies collide with our strategies and derail both of those most of the time. So when you look at it from a we need to focus on relationships because that's what the world is made up of, and conventional strategy doesn't do that, you just kind of go, well, yeah, it's obvious it's going to fail, you know. Because obviously there are going to be other actors in our strategic space who are going to do things that get in the way of our strategy and change where we're trying to get to and all that sort of thing. The world is built from these interactions. So to ignore them in your strategy making is insane, really. So, I mean, I look at it from a systems lens and I go, yeah, I'd expect it to work about as often as it does, which is about 10% of the time. So yeah,
that sounds fairly accurate. Yeah. So what I'm
it's brutal, but you know, it's how the world is, you know.
Yeah. I kind of often see organizations just kind of doing these ambitious goals, like you're saying, they're not connected to anything, or they don't take anything into account, or they don't talk about why this might be difficult, how the environment might react. And what I really like is that because we've all actually done some strategy work with you on a company. What we've done was to kind of map.
It was fun, wasn't it?
It was, I thought, for me personally, it was great. And also, if I can quote one of the participants, that like this was like a watershed moment for this person, because he said that I didn't even know that it would be able, like we would be able to talk about strategy in such a way in a big group. And like I said, so I think it's required reading for everybody. Now, one of the topics that we talked about, and I thought it kind of got interesting, was that when we're talking about strategy, organization, transformation, now we have this big influence in the form of artificial intelligence. So where do you see this having an influence? I'm assuming you see some kind of influence, or let's just speculate on how this is going to evolve at some point in the future. What is your opinion on that?
It's a really, really difficult one, because actually I don't see that much influence in real terms yet. Okay. But I'm sure there will be. I think the best analogy I can give really is it's a little bit like at the beginning of the internet, where you know, people tended to look at it from where they were, you know, and say, oh, how could we use this to do what we do now, but do it a bit better. But actually, what the internet did was make a whole load of things possible that nobody had ever thought of before, you know. And I think you're a fool to bet on with any certainty on what AI, impact AI is going to have. I don't think we know, and I don't think we should expect to know. And certainly I don't know. But there are some things you can look at and go, yeah, that looks fairly likely. So I think on strategy, I mean, you know, when we finish this, we can do we can have a play with our AI strategy tool. So we've got an AI version of Patterns of Strategy. So it will, if you put in some information about, you can have a think about this now. If you put in some information about your company, like just the website, or a company you know, it'll spit out some strategies and how those could be implemented like that, you know? So you go from something that would have taken one of the big four consultants, I don't know, 6 months, 9 months, 2 years to develop, and you can do that in minutes. So is that going to have an impact? Well, at some point it is, you know? In organization, I think I can see that going sort of two ways. And this is quite an agile-y thing as well, I think, Johannes. You know, you can see it speeding up the cadence. You can see it being used in all sorts of ways to make what we do now quicker, faster, better, easier to find stuff, you know, all those sorts of things. But equally, it could go it will go as well the other way, I think. So what you get with AI is a series of black boxes, and you have no idea how it's doing what it's doing quite often. So you can imagine people applying it to big IT systems, and you end up with something, you don't know what it's done, you don't know how it's done it. If it's wrong, you've got no idea how to fix it. You've just got this, as we have now with things like ERP and big systems of record in organizations that were written in COBOL and nobody understands them anymore. You know, you've got things that when they break, you don't, nobody in the organization knows how to fix them. You can imagine that on steroids with AI.
So you know? What you're saying is we could have the chaos quicker. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. We can have two sorts of chaos, I think. So one's a kind of an agile chaos, so we can do stuff, good stuff, faster, and that creates chaos. But also, we can do big, clunky stuff worse. And the between the two, it could be interesting, I think, you know?
Yeah. So when we stopped our initial conversation with, so I have this theory that there's like a tendency or a possibility for increased autonomy in value creating units in organizations. And my prediction would be that AI is going to enhance this. So smaller units, often probably smaller teams, are going to have more power and more autonomy. And that is going to be one of the big challenges for organizations to kind of balance that and make sure that they don't completely like decouple or decouple from the rest of the organization. You also pointed towards the fact that we might see this gigantic monolith. So because like in computer architecture, we have a decentralization form of microservices maybe, and then, but there's still the general monolith. Could you just talk a bit about how you envision this? Like how could the AI enabled organizational monolith look like?
Well, I mean, really what I was just saying, Johannes, you know, you've got this kind of schizophrenia in IT now, and you always have. I mean, you have had for like 20 years. We were talking about this 20 years ago, you know, where you've got whole areas of the industry. I mean, you know, enterprise architecture is one, which is kind of driving towards standardization and let's put it all in, you know, do vast amounts of work on ontology to try and get things standardized and, you know, all that sort of stuff. And it's baked into huge ERP systems. And at the same time, going on in the same organizations, you know, everybody's got a server under their desk and running programs that nobody knows about and you know, just to make the thing work. So you've got this sort of two-speed thing, and you always have had this two-speed thing going on. One the big, slow, centralized thing, and one the individuals or teams doing something completely different. And that's always been the case, but I think it could be more so now. Because as you say, you know, you've got your individuals and your teams powered by AI. And then, and when you put AI into the big clunky thing, it's just, I mean, Dennis made a comment in the chat, like, don't connect it to that. But you know, people are gonna, you know. So you end up with something that is even more difficult to navigate and understand, and when it goes wrong, it goes wrong. You know, I've had four bank accounts that I've had to close because the machine broke and nobody knew how to fix it, and I've had to change banks because of it. You know, this. I mean, I'm older than you. This shit happens, mate. Now I can imagine that happening just more and more because nobody understands it anymore. You know. I'm sure there will be corporations that fail because of this stuff. I'm sure there will be. There'll be stuff that the machine does that nobody understands, and it's wrong, and it gets legal.
That sounds interesting because everybody's talking about the potential of AI. Some people talk about the dangers, but what you're describing is that we could also kind of take ourselves out of the equation much quicker as an organization.
Yeah.
By speeding up these dysfunctions and driving ourselves against the wall.
I think, to be honest, in risk terms, it's more going to be the case that you are taken out by somebody who's using it well than you take yourself out by doing something really, really stupid. But I think both are going to happen for sure. And there's going to be lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of organizations who do AI stuff that just doesn't work, and they'll crash and burn. Same as there was with the .com bubble. That's kind of inevitable, I think.
Now, if we go back a bit more towards the present, do you see anything that we're doing now that is really central to strategy, organization transformation, that you think AI is not going to supplant anytime soon?
I think the big thing, actually, is there are people who argue that AI will be able to do this better than people. But I think the big thing that I see is that change is always an emotional process. And if you are in a situation, you know, that has its own rules and its own logic and its own emotion. And to move to somewhere different, which is what you're doing when you're doing change or what you're doing when you're doing strategy, that's always an emotional journey. It has to be. You don't make that journey unless your emotions are involved, you know. And I don't see AI being particularly good at that. I think that's still going to be a human thing. So, for example, I was talking about our patterns of strategy AI tool. So that will come up with an answer or 10 answers or whatever, you know. But you haven't been through the process. So if you think about when we did that exercise with you guys, I remember somebody was nearly in tears, you know, because it was quite an emotional process. And it should be. You should be doing this with your emotions involved. Well, if you just give the job to a robot, your emotions aren't involved. So what enables you to move from where we are now to a new situation? You know, I don't see AI being able to do that for you. I may be wrong, but I don't see that at the moment. So that's kind of, for me, the big hole. But I don't know. I may be wrong.
But aren't we all professionals and rational? And don't we all just keep emotions at home? I mean, I'm paying people to make rational decisions, so I don't fully understand what you're saying.
There is no such thing. Physiologically, all decision making is emotional. You cannot take a non-emotional decision. That's just baked into the physiology of who we are and what we are. But there's a good systems reason for it, because this decisions are about the future. Okay. And if you're taking a strategic decision, you're taking a decision about creating a new future. Okay. Now, there's data about the past. We can know about the past. We can argue about it, but the past is real. But the future isn't. And we really don't know. So, you know, you cannot take a fully rational decision about something that doesn't exist. You have to do, you know, that's where hopes and fears come into. That's what they're for. That's their function in the world, is to help us steer towards better futures rather than worse futures. That's what fear is for. You know, it's to say, don't walk into the lion's den, you know, go over here instead. That's its function. So no, it's not a purely rational thing. Yeah, you should think about it, but it can never, ever be a purely rational thing. And that's just how we're made. You know, you don't change that with robots.
All right. Now I'm super curious. So imagine I'm just a generic white male executive.
Which you are, obviously, yes.
Obviously, yes.
Obviously.
Of my own little ship.
Yes.
Imaginary. But in all seriousness, how do you relay this concept to people who might not? I think this might be difficult for some people to accept, that emotions are always part of this, because this is actually what I hear from people, like, hey, keep the emotions out of it, be professional, let's all be rational here. How do you convey that message?
I don't, and I don't have, well, I do on things like this, but I don't in work, I don't have to. So if we go through a strategy process together and you get emotional, you get emotional. I don't have to convey you should get emotional, Johannes. I mean, you just are. If we're doing a strategy exercise, you can read it from the body language in the room.
Yeah, I've seen that.
It's so obvious. It's so, so obvious. If people are taking it seriously, they forget that they're supposed to be rational about it. They just get on and do it, you know, and they get taken up by it. And that's how it should be. You know, you should be, if you're doing strategy, I mean, if we get asked in to do strategy work, it's usually because the organization's in trouble. It's not usually everything's fine and we just need to think about it. I mean, sometimes it is, but mostly it's not. When you map out their situation, usually you can see it in the body language. People just go, oh shit, that's why we're concerned, you know. Now that's a perfectly appropriate emotional reaction. It's the threat that the current situation presents to them that drives them into a new, different future. You know, if we carry on down the road we're in, that's not going to be pretty. We need to do something else, okay? That's the emotion doing its job. That's great, you know? But you don't have to explain that to people. They just do it, you know? I don't want to explain it because that's taking them back into the rationalizing about the emotions. Well, no, just do the emotions, you know? Let them do their thing.
Yeah. All right. So we're almost at the end of our podcasting time before we get to your AI, your patterns of strategy AI, and then the interactive part. So last thing, and this is just because I want to have a bit of fun with this, but as you've seen, Agile is dead now. We've buried it.
You said that. I didn't say that.
I've seen one or two people mention it.
One or two.
What I really liked about you is that for you, you've been so proficient at this whole Agile topic, but always just like as this, in my opinion, like this contained side topic, which always had the attention that it deserved, which was it's just part of something else. So it's not like the whole focus, but the way you describe, for example, in patterns of strategy, you mentioned multiple times that it can be a competitive advantage, but it also has to, it needs to suit the situation. Do you have any opinion on now that Agile is dead and has been buried? So what do you think is next? Can you see the next?
I suspect it will rise from the grave. I mean, like I say, I'm a lot older than you, so I've been through this. I mean, I'm not part of the Agile with a capital A movement, really, you know. But when I first started in consultancy, it's when Lean was first happening. It wasn't called Lean. It was mostly called Deming or Continuous Improvement or Kaizen. And it failed and it got rebranded and it got failed again and got rebranded and it failed again and it got rebranded and it failed again and it got rebranded and, you know, I think that movement went through 6 or 7 rebrands and it got rebranded because it crashed and burned. And I suspect that this is just Agile with a capital A crashing and burning, but the need for something doesn't go away. And I mean, Agile, you can look at it and go, it's a continuation of that, actually, because many of the ideas in Agile came from that body of thinking. And the need to be able to move faster, particularly in the IT space, with the advent of AI, of course it's going to have to come back in some shape or form. I hope it won't be as religious as Agile capital A was before, because I saw some really, really, really crazy stuff before. I mean, I remember doing a consultancy job for an aircraft manufacturer or a consortium designing a new aircraft, and they'd been told they had to do it using Scrum. Oh. And you go, you're joking, you know, because all the bits of the aircraft have to be able to work together. You can't have one team going off and designing the tailplane without actually understanding how it connects to everything else, you know, and evolving that in sort of 2 weeks while somebody else is doing something completely different that's working in a different direction. It's an absolute classic of something where it has to be totally integrated, otherwise it falls out the sky. And they all knew it was crazy. They all knew it was potentially lethal, but they've been told to do it, so they did it. Now that's religious thinking about it. So if we get a bit less of that, I think it'd be great, to be honest. But I mean, I think the problem that Agile was there to solve has not gone away. So there will be Agile, zombie Agile, resurrected, you know, return of Agile, the son of Agile, whatever, you know, however many B-movie titles you want on it.
That makes me very happy as the co-author of Zombie Scrum Survival Guide, because
said it to cheer you up.
So, yes, great. Yeah. No, so might mean a bit more book sales in the future. All right.
So now, you can work on what you're going to rebrand it as and what it's going to look like. There you go.
Nice.
There's a strategy for you. There's
already so much value in this podcast already.
I know. It's wasted, isn't it?
All right. I'm going to close the podcast part of this now. I hope this session has given you some concrete ideas for your own transformation challenges At Holisticon, we put into practice what we discuss in Transform Together. So we provide companies with holistic support throughout the digital transformation process, from strategy and technology to organizational change. We make our customers more resilient, establish a future-proof agile culture, create new business models, and inspire people with better services and products. If you're facing similar challenges or are wondering how you can implement the ideas from this session in your organization, please feel free to contact us. You can find all the information you need at holisticon.de. And don't miss our next Transform Together session in 2 weeks. So September 16th at 4 p.m. That's Central European summertime. Anna Jackson and Fisher Kwa will be our guests, and I'll be asking them to lead us through the latest developments in the Liberating Structures universe. See you then.